It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Smith back to throw. Pass time over the middle. Intercepted by Roll again. Antrell to the 20. Needs a block. Pinball down to the 5. Roll call time. Antrell with back-to-back picks.
Manning back to throw. Steps up. Deep ball down the middle of the field.
He's got Cruz. 35, 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Romo drops straight back to throw. Steps up. Gets hit by Canty.
Pass intercepted by Jason Pierre-Paul. To the 10, to the 5. Touchdown, Giants.
There goes Wilson again. Trying to break to the outside. Wilson cuts it back to his right. Needs a block, and Wilson's going to go. He's to the 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants. 97 yards.
Now here are your hosts, John Schmelk and Lance Meadow.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. Super Bowl 48 is in the books, and I don't think anybody would have predicted that. An absolute massacre that was over after the opening kickoff of half number two. Basically seal the fate of the Denver Broncos. And it's one of those games where I think if those two teams play 10 times, the Seahawks probably win 7 of them. But that was one of the worst games the Broncos have played all year. And Lance Meadow joins us this morning. And Lance, what Coach Coughlin always says, more often than not, it's teams that lose games, not teams that win games. And I think in a lot of ways, as well as the Seahawks played defensively, not taking anything away from them, great defensive performance. When you turn the ball over as many times as the Broncos did, when you have a safety and you give up a kick return for a touchdown, when you're playing a quality football team, you know what? You don't have a chance to win the football game.
But with that being said, I think you need to take into consideration the Seahawks defense forcing those turnovers. I mean, I understand we don't want to take anything away from the Seahawks defense to some degree, and you don't want to say, well, Peyton Manning is the only reason why the Broncos lost the contest. But I think the reason why the Broncos were flustered so much is because the Seahawks defense is in a league of its own. And we've talked about the Seahawks defense plenty of times, even dating back earlier this season when they played the Giants. They are aggressive. They get in your face, specifically the secondary. They have pass rushers that come in on third down. They're able to mix and match personnel. And they have been one of the only teams this season that has been successful in getting to Peyton Manning. I mean, he was seeing the footsteps and hearing the footsteps throughout the course of that game. He had not seen that or heard that throughout the course of this season.
And that, to me, more than anything else, was the difference. I could not agree more, Lance. In that first quarter... Even on that first interception where he wasn't hit, he was feeling the pressure on that particular play. He forced him to rush the throw a little bit. He didn't set his feet properly. Then, of course, on his second interception that got returned for a touchdown, his arm got hit. The ball got popped in the air. Knowshon Moreno gave him absolutely no help in trying to knock the ball down and break up the play. I don't know what he was doing. I thought he had a camera out trying to take a picture. I want to capture this moment. I remember it forever.
He's taking a selfie.
Exactly. And gets intercepted, returned for a touchdown, and gift-wrapped MVP honors for Malcolm Smith. And look, again, the Seahawks defense is excellent. I think top to bottom, they're the better football team than the Denver Broncos. But I also think it's a shame that the Broncos came out and played as poorly as they did in the biggest game of the year.
Well, it gets back to the point, John, that the Seahawks defense is above and beyond what the Broncos saw the entire season. And Denver put up numbers that no other team has been able to match during the course of NFL history from an offensive perspective. But you do need to take into consideration the defenses that the Broncos went up against during the season versus what the Seahawks present. And I always refer to the Seahawks defense as unique. I'm not going to crown them as the best defense in NFL history, but this secondary gets so up in the face of receivers and forces you to get out of your route so early that I don't think the Demaryius Thomases, the Wes Welkers, the Eric Deckers of the world saw that. They haven't been tested to that degree at any point this season.
And even more so than that, or in addition to that, really, when you catch the ball over the middle, the safety position, whether it was Earl Thomas or Cam Chancellor, is always there. As soon as the Broncos caught those little shallow crosses that they love to run, and those are set up to catch the ball, turn off field, and get run after the catch, the Broncos got 0 yards after catch in that game on Sunday. They caught the ball, they got tackled. Now, a couple times Demaryius Thomas wasn't turning the ball off field quick enough, and that was driving people nuts, but excellent job by Cam Chancellor, Excellent job by the linebackers. Excellent job by Earl Thomas, not allowing the Broncos to catch the football and get it upfield.
Well, I don't know if you heard the music that was being played at MetLife Stadium, but the Broncos were bouncing last night. They were bouncing right off Seattle defenders. I mean, I've never seen guys fly. Welker may have caught the ball. By the time he even thought about turning around, John,
he was gonna hit.
Cam Chancellor was there to send him 5 yards back. And it was like that throughout the course of the game, and that gets back to the physicality of this Seahawks defense. I'm not trying to crown them, once again, for those of you listening, but they are really good. I think that's a fair synopsis to say.
Well, and the beautiful part of it is that you didn't have to blitz to get pressure either. Look, the Seahawks brought some pressure now and then, but for the most part, they get pressure with their front four. You know, Cliff Averill, a low-cost free agent acquisition in the offseason. Michael Bennett, a low-cost free agent acquisition in the offseason. And then throw in the fact that everybody in the secondary is a mid-round pick except for Earl Thomas. And you got a team that's built to win. And it's a secondary that did everything. And then offensively, Russell Wilson was never really asked to make a play. He completed a couple nice slant routes on that first drive. After that Broncos first punt to get them into field position to get a score. But other than that, he never had to do anything. You know, the Broncos rush defense did a pretty darn good job on Marshawn Lynch. He never really erupted in the game. Percy Harvin made a couple plays. But the Seahawks offense was never put in the position where, look, we have to go out and do something. And therefore, they never made a mistake because they never had to feel the pressure of having to make a play.
Well, they got up early, and that was a huge cushion because basically it played right into the hands of the defense. But Wilson did make some plays. I thought Jermaine Kearse, Golden Tate. I mean, those guys did a nice job moving the chains. And Percy Harvin, who I felt was going to be a huge X factor coming into this game.
And he was.
Not necessarily on special teams, but on offense. Because, see, the difference between this game against the Broncos versus the game against the Saints and the game against the Niners, you know, they knew with 2 weeks it was safe to game plan and put in a package for Percy Harvin. Whereas the other games, it was basically up in the air. Was his hip going to hold up? Was he going to be able to recover from the concussion? And kudos to the Seahawks for getting him to last 4 quarters because that has not happened at all this season other than that matchup in the regular season against the Vikings. So, you know, he was huge. He gave them that speed factor. He gave them that versatility factor. And I think it really caught the Broncos off guard because you could see him on film once or twice against the Vikings earlier this season, but that doesn't really indicate to you how the Seahawks were going to utilize him throughout the game. So that gave them somewhat of a rude awakening, and credit the Seahawks for taking full advantage of that, making game-changing plays. Listen, the Seahawks led the NFL in takeaways. That was not a fluke because they were getting about 2 or 3 a game. So all they did, John, they just matched the same script that they followed all season long.
But they did it against the best offense in football, and I think the way you said, you have to look at the type of defenses the Broncos played during the year. What type of offenses did the Seahawks play during the year? No offense in that NFC West is what you would consider to be explosive. They played the Giants, who are human turnover machines this year. So I don't think the Seahawks played necessarily a schedule featuring a bunch of offensive juggernauts either, which is why I think everyone was looking forward to it as such a great matchup. Number one defense, number one offense. Let's see who can do it. And look, we haven't had a Super Bowl like this since the Buck-Raider game back in 2002 when Dexter Jackson got that MVP. And I think it was a very similar situation. It was just disappointing that the game that everyone thought was going to be so good, so close, and so exciting, frankly, ended up being a game where you're more interested in the commercials the last 30 minutes than you are what's going on the field.
Which weren't anything to write home about to begin with either.
No, they were not.
Getting back to the Raiders-Bucks parallel, coincidentally, John, that was actually the last time the number one offense went up against the number one defense.
Now, that also unique because Bill Callahan basically screwed the pooch that year and didn't change any of his offensive play calls, even though John Gruden knew every single play in the system and they practiced to be ready for him. So that is a unique situation, but you're right. And it bothers me. I wanted a good football game, and now all people are going to do are kill Peyton Manning for a year until we come back next season, can't win the big game, choke quarterback. And look, did Peyton Manning play his A game? No, but that loss and the way they got dominated goes way beyond Peyton Manning.
Lost that game, the Broncos, on all three facets. They lost on special. Peyton Manning didn't give up the Percy Harvin touchdown. All the turnovers, some of them were responsible in terms of Manning's play, but think about the lack of pass protection that he received and the Seahawks' defensive line getting the best of the O-line to not give him an opportunity to throw the football. So, to me, everybody can basically spread the wealth on the Broncos to take some blame on this loss. I know the critics who are very hard on Peyton Manning are going to say, well, he never delivers in the big games, but that means you didn't really watch the game as a whole. The Seahawks dominated offense, defense, special teams.
And it also means you didn't pay attention to him getting his team to the Super Bowl, which he obviously did. And, you know, not very often do quarterbacks bring two different teams to the Super Bowl. And this is how I'm going to try to wrap a bow on this before we get to your calls in just 1 second. And how I'm going to relate it back to the Giants. And the same way a lot of people are killing Peyton Manning is the same way a lot of people killed Eli Manning this year. And quite frankly, in the Super Bowl, Peyton played a lot better than Eli did most of the time this year. And frankly, Eli was more to blame, I think, for the Giants' issues this year than Peyton was for the Broncos' issues yesterday in that game on Sunday. That being said, everyone tries to make this sport about one guy in a team, whether it's Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, a quarterback, the Vikings with Adrian Peterson. Go down the list, whatever you want to talk about, whichever team. And they want to make it about one guy. Football is a team sport. There are 22 players on the field at any given time. And yes, the quarterback is by far the most positioned on the field. And if you don't have a good one, odds are you're not going to be able to win in this league. That's just the way it is. But the quarterback can't do it himself. The quarterback needs offensive linemen to protect him. The quarterback needs receivers to get separation, to break tackles, to get run after the catch. All these things need to come in place for a team to win a football game, especially against another team of the type of quality that you're going to play in a game like the Super Bowl. And I think you saw last night what happens when, even if you have a great player like Peyton Manning, unless the other guys on their team do their job and win their matchups, it doesn't matter if you have an advantage at quarterback. There's a good chance you're probably still not going to win the game. And I think that's how you can circle back here and give some hope to Giant fans that if you put the right pieces around Eli next year, you can have a better result.
I think that's a perfect synopsis of what played out this past season. I mean, in terms of yesterday's game, just to relate it to somewhat similar issues that the Giants faced, you mentioned that Sean Moreno did not help out Peyton Manning in terms of pass protection and trying to bail out his quarterback to prevent some turnovers. Monte Ball came in, and every time Monte Ball was in, since he's so predictable because he lacks pass protection experience, they're only going to run the football. So what happened with the Giants? Sometimes the running backs didn't come to play. As a result, Eli wasn't his best. Offensive line issues. The Denver Broncos offensive line had been tremendous this season. How many times was Manning touched, let alone sacked? And he felt the pressure last night. So, you know, those are two elements that affect the quarterback greatly. And then wide receivers dropping passes. Broncos had a lot of receivers not necessarily bail out Manning yesterday either.
Give up a kickoff return for a touchdown. Giant fans familiar with that this year.
Special teams woes.
You had the snap over Eli Manning's head. Miscues, mistakes. When the Broncos are trying to get back into the game, they had driven it into Seahawks territory. At this point, it was either a one or two score game. I think it was 12-0 Seattle at that point. And what happens? The Broncos get an offensive holding penalty. They put themselves into a hole at first and 20, and then all of a sudden you're against the number one defense. How are you going to convert on a first and 20? It's very difficult. So all these little mistakes add up, and it looks like, oh, Peyton blew it again in a big spot, but it's really a lot bigger than that. And I think it was also a lot bigger than that for the Giants this year
and
Eli.
And then as a result, with respect to the play calling, John, I know it's being nitpicky to really pinpoint plays, specific ones, in the second half when the Broncos were down by so much. But, you know, there was a third and long where they ran a draw play. I mean, you've got Peyton Manning under center. Why not put the ball in the best quarterback's hands? So that's another example of how things flustered them so much. They got out of character.
They did a little bit. If you remember, though, there was a third and 10 earlier in the playoffs where Manning audible to a running play, and they ran that draw play, and they got the first down. And if Ball would have gotten, I think it was Monte Ball in the game at that point. It might have been Moreno.
It may have been Moreno.
Whoever it
yeah,
was.
I don't remember.
If he would have got by that one defense line, there actually was a lot of room on that play. But you're right. And look, when you get down against a defense like the Seahawks, who not only number one overall, if they do have a weakness, it's stopping the run. Best secondary in the league. So when you get into a situation where you have to throw to win the game, it becomes awfully tough against that group of players.
Though the defensive tackles for the Seahawks, which you're right, have struggled at times, played really well. I mean, Mebane got some great pressure on Manning. There were plays where he was on the left, he ran all the way to the right. He was like a linebacker.
Yeah, and the linebackers did a good job filling the holes as well. So we'll talk about all that. If you guys want to, I kind of want to save it for later in the week. If you want to touch on Strahan Hall of Fame, we can. But I'd rather keep it Super Bowl if we can on this Monday. But whatever you want to talk about, 201-939-4513. Now, here's the trick. Office is closed because of the snow. I didn't find out until after I got here. Lance, a tripper as well. So we're doing the show, but no one else is here. So we'll be streaming, taking your calls, screening your calls, all at the same time. We doing it all here on Giants.com.
Where
everyone
many
else
hats.
Cuddles under their blankets in their lovely homes and apartments.
The extended vacation for all other Giants personnel.
In fact, basically the only people here are some people in football operations, Bob Papa doing a serious radio show in my office, and Lance and I doing our Giants radio show here in Nile's office. So give us a call. We have four full lines. We'll get to all of you. 201-939-4513. I haven't heard from Susan in Bohemia in quite a while. Susan, it's good to hear from you. How's everything going?
Hi, John. Great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great analysis of the game. You did a great job just now. And plus, you said basically what I wanted to say, because I was just like surprised in the aspect that Peyton Manning, who has a great O-line, he had a good O-line because they did a good job last night. They were pressured, but there was a lot of times where he was open and he had plenty of time. But he has a great O-line, good tight ends, a running game. He had four great receivers that threw for, what, over 1,000 yards this season. But yet he fumbles. He has the safety. He had the two interceptions. He could have had more, too. I mean, there was a couple there that could have gone for more interceptions. And yet Eli, who throws four or five touchdowns. Oh, and the thing is, though, Peyton Manning, and I've been reading as much sports stuff this morning as possible. Yeah, they're blaming Manning, but they're going kind of soft on him. They're saying, oh, well, it's all because of the Seahawks defense, which is true. But when Eli threw the five interceptions against the same great defense, he was raked. He was given, like, full blame for it all, except for you guys. I mean, you guys gave him some leeway with it. But, you know, it just seems just so totally unfair. That Seahawks defense was amazing. And I really think that, you know, you could understand a little bit more. Let's go a little bit easier on Eli now, because that was tough. And he had a porous O-line. He had no tight ends. He had, what, one receiver that was consistent.
Yeah.
He had no running game, you know. So we got to really think about that. I mean, we got a good quarterback there. He's never going to give us numbers like Peyton does during the regular season or the success. That's just not Eli. But, you know, we got a gem when it comes to the postseason. And, you know, I just think that we got to really, like, you know, let's stop complaining about our quarterback. He had a bad season, but you know what? He's there when we need him. And, you know, God willing, he'll turn it around this year. And we'll move forward. So, and that's it.
Thank you, Susan.
All right, Susan. Appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
And survive the snow.
Correct. And the one thing I wanted to piggyback off of what Susan mentioned, and, you know, I'm not looking to necessarily show that the Giants struggled immensely compared to the Broncos. However, the biggest difference between the Giants and the Broncos this past season, and an indication as to why the Giants need to drastically improve their depth chart. You know, as Susan mentioned, the Giants had some big offensive line issues this season, and that was a big reason why Eli Manning was pressured a lot. Now, Manning had a good offensive line throughout the course of the season, and he had plenty of time to throw the ball, though Manning does get the ball away very quickly compared to other quarterbacks. But Denver deserves a lot of credit, because for those of you who are not that familiar with the Broncos, they lost Dan Copen, their starting center, right at the beginning of the season due to a torn ACL. They went through three centers this season, including Manny Ramirez, who started yesterday and had his fair share of issues. They lose Ryan Clady, a Pro Bowl left tackle in the Giants game.
One of the best in the league.
Correct. And replace him with Chris Clark. So the Broncos were actually tested with respect to the injury bug. However, because of their depth chart and because of very good free agency signings and draft picks, they were able to overcome those issues. The Giants were not. That's the biggest difference.
And an offensive system that perhaps allows you to have a little bit more success with a bad offensive line than the Giants system with those quick passes and things of that nature. So I think all those things put together, certainly true.
But you can overcome the issues, like you said, John, if you have some stability, some structure, some good personnel, and a good system. And I think the Giants couldn't overcome that because a lot of the things we just threw out, they struggled immensely. So I think the goal is beef up your starters this offseason, but also do not lose sight that you need that second layer of defense in terms of your depth chart.
201-939-4513. And how do you do that? With the draft, obviously.
Absolutely.
So the Giants have to do good in draft and in the free agent market, getting not only starters, but also depth on both sides of the ball. Let's go back to our phone and say what's up to Anthony down in Maryland. He's been holding the longest. Anthony, what's up, pal?
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing? One thing I wanted to say about the offensive line between the Broncos and the Giants is the Broncos offensive line is massive. The Giants offensive line all season we were bullied. pushed back, bullied, beat up. And, of course, Eli, when the offensive line is bullied, you don't have no time to throw the ball. No holes are being opened up for the running game. The tight ends, Brandon Myers, I can't believe he's so garbage. I can't stand that guy. But one question I want to ask you guys is, what do you think the offensive line is going to look like for the Giants in 2014? Do you think it's going to be all rookies or veterans and rookies? What is your take on that?
My feel for it, and this is just how I'm looking at it now, I believe if I had to make a bet, and this could change if a great offensive tackle is available in the draft, in my opinion, Will Beattie and Pugh will still be your two starting tackles. You're going to have two veterans on the inside that they'll sign in free agency, and then your third player will either be maybe a Kevin Booth, maybe a player you draft in the middle rounds, like a third-round pick, something like that. And I think that's how you'll even out that offensive line. I think you can have two new veterans inside and then probably one young player is how I would probably set that up.
Okay, one more comment before I let you guys go. I heard the lady say about Eli and Peyton. And one thing I have to say, Peyton does put up monster numbers in the regular season. But when it comes to the postseason, no disrespect to Peyton, but he can't see Eli in the postseason. Eli in the postseason, when he gets into the postseason, he gets there and he wins. We both know that. 08 and 2011.
Now, Anthony, in fairness, Peyton did a pretty darn good job against the Chargers, and he did a pretty darn good job against the Patriots in the AFC Championship game and the AFC Divisional Round. Let's not forget that.
No, I'm not forgetting that at all. Like I said, Peyton, he does do his – but it's just when he gets to – it just seems when he gets to the Super Bowl, he's just a different type of player than Eli is. You know what I mean? Just Eli's just – is nothing's around him. He's focused on the game. When Peyton just gets there – with the Colts against the Saints, he had the same exact game. He threw interceptions against the Saints. Granted, this Seahawks defense is monstrous. They're a bunch of – all of them are beast mode. All of them are beast. From Richard Sherman to Earl Thomas to the front four to the back end to Van Chance. But that whole defense is physical. They're big. They're strong. And it seemed like yesterday's game, the wide receivers, they were scared. The Seahawks had the wide receivers scared to get hit, scared to get tackled. It looks like they were just scared, and they just so it was 22-0. I turned the game off. When it was 22-0, I turned the game off. I said the game is over. I turned it off. It was over. There was nothing they were going to be able to do.
Anthony, thanks for the call, buddy.
Thanks a lot, my man.
All right, Anthony, appreciate it.
And what also Anthony is touching on is the fact that, you know, there's a lot of other factors around Peyton Manning that contributed to why he didn't play effectively and why at times he struggles in the big game. I think, you know, Eli Manning has had the benefit of a solid defense in his two Super Bowl runs and a lot of other things that went well for him in terms of, you know, some big time catches at the right moment. I'm not trying to take anything away from Eli Manning, but when you rank quarterbacks, when you downgrade quarterbacks, you can't overlook the fact that, you know, you need a lot of other things around you to go well in order for you to put together a very strong Super Bowl performance. I mean, take, for example, Russell Wilson. He made plays. He protected the football. But look at the support he received from his defense. His defense was so opportunistic yesterday that how many times did Russell Wilson have to march down the field 70 to 80 yards? He didn't because the Seahawks defense gave him such favorable field position. So, once again, not trying to take anything away from Russell Wilson, but if you don't have as stingy of a defense playing with Russell Wilson, who's to say that he's going to put up the type of performance he did? A lot of things go hand-in-hand in the NFL.
Hey, and no question, look, and Eli's had monster games in the postseason. For example, his game against the Packers in the 2007 NFC Championship game was one of the best performances I've seen in that type of weather. It was an unbelievable performance. But let me throw a couple of things out there. You go back to those other games in 2007, his number is not off the charts by any means in those other games. And in his two Super Bowl wins, he scored 17 points in one game, and he scored 21 points in the other. And only got the 17 in 2007 because David Tyree makes a miracle catch on that final drive. So, like you said, you know, if Peyton had to go out there and all Peyton needed to do was put up 17 points, guess what? I think Peyton probably could have put up 17 points. Just saying.
I would say that's safe to say. That's why you need to really look at the whole thing. I know it's so easy and comfortable to say pain and struggles in the postseason, and that's why his legacy is going to be diminished or damaged. But as you mentioned earlier in the show, John, it's not one guy that's on the football field all the time. That's why I almost laugh when I hear the debates about Brady versus Manning head-to-head. It's not as if the quarterbacks are going head-to-head. You know, Brady's not defending Manning. Manning's not defending Brady. You need a good defense to help you out.
It's not like in the NBA where you got Mel and LeBron guarding each other down the floor. It's just, you know.
That's
look,
too simple.
It's fair. Manning did not play as well as he should have played in that game against the Saints. He should have played a lot better in that game.
Too, yeah.
That is a fair criticism to get on Manning for that game. The Saints were not a great defense that year.
They were opportunistic,
though. They forced a lot of
turnovers,
yeah. But they gave up a lot of yards. And for Manning to only get 17 points against the Saints back on February 7, 2010, that's a fair criticism. I cannot kill you for that. I cannot get on anybody for being upset at Peyton Manning. But look, he has a Super Bowl on his resume. He's been to three, won one. I just can't call a guy this big-game choker when he's had this level of success in the postseason and the regular season. And remember this, folks. It's hard to win a Super Bowl. Do you think Tom Brady's forgotten how to win? And that's why he hasn't won in the last 9 years? Do you think his quote-unquote clutch gene has been deactivated? And all of a sudden he's not a big-game quarterback anymore? And now Tom Brady's a choke artist? No. It's just really hard. It's really, really hard to win a Super Bowl. You're playing against the best players on the best teams in the NFL. Why hasn't Brady won? Is he not a great quarterback anymore? Of course he is. He's fantastic. So is Peyton. It's just really hard to win Super Bowls. It's really, really hard.
Well, quoting Jerry Reese, he always says, sometimes you need the luck to win those Super Bowls.
You do. And the Giants got their fair share of breaks. And when you go back, and there's nothing negative about saying that. You go back to the Yankees dynasty from, you know, 96 to 2001 when they won 4 out of 5. Guess what? The Yankees got their fair share of breaks. Jeffrey Mayer, hello, anybody?
Yes, huge break.
And I'm a huge Yankee fan. I was at the clinching games of World Series. Guess what? The Yankees caught some breaks.
What about 2001 when they didn't even win it, but they got there? Jeter's tagged out an inch or two earlier. We're not even talking about them getting that far.
You get to play at the plate against
Correct.
The Oakland A's.
There
if John B.
That's
slides.
Yeah.
You got, you know, Luis Vizcaíno against the Mets in, you know, RBI singles. You know, the non-called strike three in the Mets in the World Series game that Mets fans get upset about. The Mark Langston pitch to Tino Martinez, a lot of people thought were a strike. I mean, look, things go either way. And then the script flips. You go to 2004. If Tony Clark's ground rule double doesn't bounce into the stands and hits the wall instead, the Yankees beat the Red Sox in 2004 in 5 games. And the best comeback in the history of sports never even happens. So many things have to work for you to win. And I just cannot crucify a guy like a lot of people want to do to Peyton Manning for not winning a Super Bowl as often as you would like him to win it. That's all I'm saying.
To get there is impressive alone.
I mean, look, Jim Kelly got the 4 Super Bowls. He never won one. Does that make him bad? Was Elway a bad quarterback until he won a Super Bowl in 98? Of course not. It's a team sport.
That's why, to me, I judge it consistency year in and year out. And Manning has that. Yeah, you know, you'd like to see a guy be able to duplicate that in the postseason, but you know, as we just went over, there's a lot of other factors that need to add up in order for you to finally grab that piece of hardware, and it doesn't always bounce your way.
Though, one thing Anthony said was right. Generally speaking, and I think this is a fair way to put it, in the biggest spots, Eli probably plays closer or better than his typical performance than Peyton would.
Well, you can't argue with that because it's been well documented in the 2 Super Bowls. He
right.
makes the big plays when he needs it the most. However, with that being said, you know, considering this game was somewhat lopsided, was Manning even in a position to make
right.
a big play?
And the thing about it, too, you have to look at it, is that Eli doesn't make the postseason as much. So aren't these games that Eli's losing at the end of these regular seasons to get into the playoffs just as important as playoff
That's
games?
Fair point.
So aren't those games just as big? That game the Giants had against the Cowboys on November 24th that ended their season, isn't that a virtual playoff game? When they lost in the first round of the playoff to the Eagles, it's a playoff game. You know, when they closed out the stadium here against the Carolina Panthers and they got destroyed, it's a playoff game. You're trying to get in. So, look, this whole big game thing, I just think sometimes it gets overblown. 201-939-4513. I'm sure I just angered a lot of Giant fans out there. But
well, you do that on a daily basis.
I try to keep things fresh. So let's go to Steve in Washington, D.C. Steve-O, good
hey,
morning.
Hey, what's happening? John Lance, man. We missed you guys, man. Missed the show. Glad you're back. I tell you, man, I was so disappointed, like many fans, you know, about last night's game. From the beginning to the end, and I tell you, you know, I actually lost a bet to my son. Got to go get him some games from GameStop. But from the very beginning of the game, I tell you, I'll kind of go into this whole thing real quick about, you know, my whole theme of the day is basically going to be like, you know, it's just the changing of the guard, guys. And from, you know, the minute the safety went and I saw Peyton, didn't even really try to run towards the ball. Now, first of all, let me just say this, because I know this is a big issue, that, you know, Peyton Manning is one of the greatest of all time. I don't care what happened in yesterday's game.
Exactly.
You know, it's not about yesterday's game. This is a team sport, guys. And, you know, and we know the playoffs is really about defense and running game. And, you know, hats off to Seattle's team. They, you know, they did their thing without question. You know, so, I mean, I should have been, you know, not as surprised as I was to see it go the way it did. But, they got out of rhythm early, and you know what bothered me is to watch, you know Peyton. I understand he's got these neck injuries or whatever, but if that was Aaron Rodgers back there and that safety again, at the very least he would have blocked somebody. But Peyton didn't even, you know, make sure he got on the ball, and that bothered me. And you know, and
Steve, I will say this: the one thing about Peyton, once he gets into that rhythm and gets comfortable, he's very difficult to stop, and the Seahawks never let him get into that rhythm.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you know, because they got behind so early, you know, they never got a chance to, you know, utilize their running game. And obviously, knowing that he wasn't going to make any attempt to run, you know, the defense got to cheat a little bit, well, a whole lot. And, that's part of the bigger problem. You know, it just got lopsided quickly, and, you know, they weren't able to execute their game plan, and he wasn't able to do what he does best, which is by, you know, calling different plays and being methodical and reading the defense. But I don't really think he could have played a much better game. I think, you know, he did the very best, and it doesn't fall just on him. Like I said, it's a team sport. But I just think that, and also one other thing that really kind of – I thought, that Wilson deserved to be the MVP. It's almost contractual that the quarterback get it. And the guy, you know, I don't think, you know, he's getting enough credit. You know, he, what, 123, you know, passer rating with over 70% of his passes completed. I think, you know, Joe Flacco did probably a little bit less than that, and Wilson did make plays when he needed to make plays. So I really felt like he should have got the MVP. I don't know why he didn't.
Not to cut you off, but I think you can make an argument that all three facets deserved it. Percy Harvin, you can make a case for. You can make a case for the entire defense, and you can make a case for Wilson.
Yeah, honestly, I would have given it to Harvin before I gave it to Wilson if you weren't going to pick a defensive player. Steve, I just think in a game like that where the Seattle defense shut down the number one offense in football, I feel like you're almost obligated to give it to a defensive player. You know what I mean?
Listen, I agree with you. I mean, I thought Percy Harvin was going to be the X factor going into the game, but I also just feel like, you know, contractually it's always, you know, what, Joe Flacco was the MVP then? You know, I mean, come on. Did he not do pretty much the same thing? I thought the kid played well, you know, with no turnovers, really the last five or six games of the season, too.
Flacco put up 30 points against one of the best defenses in the league.
Well, I mean, you know, I thought Denver's defense, you know, obviously things got lopsided so quick. You know, I thought their defense played well going into the game, so I was kind of, you know, taken back by, you know, their lack of, I wouldn't say effort, but, you know, just execution, I'd rather. But, you know, needless to say, you know, I just wanted to know what you guys think about, you know, us. I don't, you know, moving forward to going with the Giants, I just don't really see, if we had, you know, been in the same position, I don't really see how we could win. And, you know, given the fact that once we get behind, you know, we don't have any threat, I think we need to have, you know, look at a dual quarterback moving forward. And, I want to know what you guys think about that, because that's the way I see, you know, that, you know, the NFL, you know, successful, you know, teams are going to be is have a dual threat there. You know, going into the playoffs, we had, what, three or four, you know, dual threats. Somebody, you know, with a, you know, at least a threat of a run. So when you get behind like that, you know, defenses just can't cheat.
Well, but Steve, look at some of the other teams that made the playoffs, specifically on the AFC, and appreciate the phone call, Steve. Mm-hmm. Good hearing from you. You know, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Phillip Rivers, those guys are not dual threat quarterbacks. So, you know, I'm afraid that the trend now is going to be, well, Russell Wilson won a Super Bowl, so that's the style of quarterback you need to get to that position. Keep in mind, Russell Wilson, while by definition, yes, can run, I still look at him as a pocket passer quarterback, meaning that he is running as a last resort compared to a Colin Kaepernick, who to me has not yet made the full adjustment to life in the NFL. If there's one thing you could walk away with Colin Kaepernick, it's that he needs to get a little bit more comfortable in the pocket. Russell Wilson, to me, has adjusted from his rookie year to his sophomore year, where he's realized, okay, I need to be comfortable in the pocket. I need to be able to make the passes. And then in the event that the pocket collapses, then I can run off to the side and still throw at a very high percentage, because he was in the top five in the NFL in terms of completion percentage with throws outside the pocket. So he has shown that he can be effective, but it's still a last resort for him. He's not a run-first quarterback.
And what did we see? And really, the reason the Niners lost to the Seattle Seahawks. He wasn't a polished enough passer. He threw three interceptions in that game in the second half, and it killed his team.
Referring to Kaepernick, of course.
To Kaepernick, obviously. And I agree. I think Russell Wilson's looking to throw. And I think Russell Wilson, as much as his legs help him at times, I think he many times bails out of the pocket when there are plays being made down the field, and will sometimes scramble when he doesn't have to. And I think he gets some happy feedback there sometimes. So I think, look, does it help to be mobile to avoid the rush? Sure. But like you said, Lance, look at the teams in the playoffs. Go through every playoff team. Are you looking at mobile quarterbacks or are you looking at pocket quarterbacks? Drew Brees. Yeah, he can move, but he's a pocket passer. Nick Foles. Yeah, he can move a little bit, pocket passer. You have Kaepernick and Russell Wilson. We talked about them. Aaron Rodgers, obviously, pocket passer.
Cam Newton, more of a pocket passer this year. Was not running as much as he did in the previous season.
Correct. And look, and that's what happens. Do you know why running quarterbacks become pocket passers?
They get hurt.
Well, one, because they get hurt, yes. That's the biggest reason. But number two, they know in order to succeed in this league, you have to be able to complete throws in the pocket and move the ball, you know, with your arm. And go to the AFC. Peyton, Rivers, Manning.
Dalton.
Andy Dalton, another
Andrew
one.
Luck runs Andrew as Luck. A last resort.
Exactly.
Alex Smith. Alex Smith's not running all over the place always. He's still pretty much a pocket passer.
Look, you got to be able to throw the ball in the pocket to win. 201-939-4513. Gino is in South Florida. Gino, good morning.
How you doing, fellas?
Doing well, Gino.
Yeah, I wanted to touch on a draft subject first. I'm more of an old school type of guy, even though I'm young. I think best player in the draft is better than going with an old lineman again. We went with the old lineman with the short hands. I don't even know his name.
Justin Pugh, you're talking about.
Pugh, but yeah,
Justin Pugh started
impact.
Every game this season, though.
Yeah, but
and he improved drastically
impact.
As the season progressed. What are you talking about? I think he showed tremendous strides.
You can make the argument he was your right, best offensive
all right,
lineman
all right.
this
I'm
year.
Leave, I'll leave that one alone. I'll leave that one alone. Pugh, okay. He's coming into age. He's just a rookie last year. I'll give him a pass. All right. Now, Coughlin's stepson, he got to go. You know, like all I kind of like the direction Giants are going in. They're cutting all family ties. That's what's killing us, the family ties.
Christie wasn't even on the field last year, though.
Huh?
Christie didn't even play last year. He was hurt the whole season.
That and we need to let him go. We don't need him back.
All right, that's
we
fine.
We don't need him back.
Well, that's fine, but you got to replace him with somebody that can play.
Definitely, but I don't think that we should go first round number 12 with an offensive lineman. He doesn't put up points. We need a playmaker. A playmaker.
Well,
a
guards,
person who puts up
to answer
points.
Your question, Gino, guard to me is the biggest need, as John even touched on earlier in the show. And guards don't normally go that high in the first round, so I wouldn't be overly concerned that the Giants are going to reach
one
on
in
a guard.
Second?
That's
can we
possible.
Get one in the second round?
It's
or
possible
third.
They could get in the second or third.
Or the third. Can we go with a playmaker top 10 pick in the draft instead of going with an offensive lineman who who might be good, might not be good.
Well, Gino, how about this? Would you be okay with them picking the best cornerback on the board with their first round pick?
I honestly would, because I think we're getting a little old at cornerback. You know, we need depth, like you said earlier. We have no depth on our bench. Like, you know, I look at these guys. I love the Giants, my team. I love them to death. But we just need more depth. Spend some money in free agency. Like, Giants need to stop being cheap all the time.
Well, Gino, to me, Gino, there are five different ways the Giants can go with that first round pick. They could either go for an offensive tackle, and then they would move Pugh inside. That's one way. I don't think they're going to go that way, but you could do that. You could pick a cornerback, like I mentioned. You could go with a pass rusher, and I'll never put it past Joe Reese to select a pass rusher. I think that's always on the table, especially if Justin Tuck doesn't re-sign. I think there's an outside chance they take a tight end or a wide receiver, a playmaker outside. But, again, I'm not positive about that. And I think those are your five. Tight end, wide receiver, offensive tackle, cornerback, pass rusher.
I think a linebacker, maybe a decent or something. It would be a stretch, but that's
the first
a possibility.
Round, unless one of those two guys projected in the top 10 drop, Mac or the other kid, not sure a guy's going to be there that they can pick at 12. And as you well know, Les.
Well, I'm not saying they're going to go there, of course. But you got to throw it out there as an option.
So I'll throw that at that. Fine. Those are the six different ways they could go in the first round of the draft.
Respect Gil Bride, you know, he's done great for us, but I'm kind of glad we're moving forward. I just want to leave that alone, and I want to go to the Bronco situation from last night, then I'll let you guys continue with the beautiful show. I tell people this all the time. The NFL's year to year. Last year, people were screaming, 49ers defense are the best. They're the best in the world. Now it's the Seahawks defense this year that's the best in the world. Who's going to be best next year? These guys are not going to be on the same team for long. Other teams will offer these guys bigger money. Seahawks can't pay. The defense will change. No problem. They had a great game last night, but I feel like it was more of a momentum out the gate. Everything was just wrong. The way we beat Tom Brady, the same way. We got the two. We got him shucking up, and he threw the pass that was intentional grounding, and it was 2-0. Am I correct?
Yep. Correct. You got it.
I am correct. That's what happened. I mean, that's sort of what happened last night with Peyton Manning and the Broncos. I was very, very upset on the center. It's inexperienced. I don't blame him too much. He'd never been to the big game. He's kind of, you know, butterflies in his stomach. But that specific play right there, not saying that Peyton Manning couldn't come back and win it, but that specific play, I'm not going to say it sucked everything out the Broncos, but it definitely hit them hard.
Well, it's a momentum killer. You never want to start off a game like that.
It's a momentum killer because we, as Seahawks, I'm talking in, you know, if I was one of them, we gave you the ball. It's our ball at half, and then you guys mess up on your first play of the game.
Yeah, it's
that's
a bad start.
That's a big momentum killer.
Thanks, Gino.
That's a big momentum killer. All right. You guys have a nice day.
Hey, you
all
too,
right, Gino.
Thanks for calling
in.
Appreciate it.
All right.
And look, and that just set the tone for the whole game. I mean, it never got better. They started out of sync, and they were out of sync from quarter one to quarter four. And one other thing we should note, talking to a couple people that went to the game that I know, you know, they said probably about 50-50 Seahawks and Broncos fans. That's a number of people. But they could not say enough about the quality of the Seahawks fans in terms of noise they created. But also, they were pretty gracious, apparently, after the game was over, too. Not a lot of jerks, like talking trash and making fun of Bronco fans. Apparently, from what I understand, the Seahawks fans came off very, very well in that building on Sunday.
Well, I'm sure they were very pleased with how their team performed. And the bottom line is, if the game's a little bit closer, maybe, you know, it still hasn't had enough time to sink in. And maybe you get out of line in terms of your character. They knew they had that game in hand from the get-go. So I think that basically made it a lot easier to walk out of the building and act somewhat graciously under those circumstances.
201-939-4513. Hugo's in New Jersey. Hugo, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Glad to hear you back on the air.
Good to hear from you, Hugo.
You know, I guess our game like last night, you look back for bad omens. I'll give credit to my wife, who's not a football fan. During the opening coin toss, she pointed out, what's Peyton Manning doing with the helmet on his head. And he was the only guy out there with the helmet on his head. I said, he's a little uptight. You know, he's famous for his obsessiveness, and I think that may be one of the reasons why he doesn't perform as well in big games. But I agree with you guys. I mean, they were just overwhelmed. The Seattle Seahawks defense was a buzzsaw out there. You know, he wasn't getting good protection. By the way, his receivers, too. I looked at a couple of shots. I said, that guy, Eric Decker, is about as soft as you
can get.
Had
a rough game, yeah.
Someone lays a hand on him, the guy just gets off his route. He doesn't even fight through.
Well, but that's another example, though, of how unique the Seahawks defense is. Once again, Decker was not seeing that type of pressure and physicality at the line all season long.
You know what, though? I would have liked to see the Broncos, and I know they're not a vertical passing game, and I know that's how they've run their offense all year. And I had people yelling at the game, at the party I was at, or gathering that I was at, I'd call it that. It wasn't really necessarily a party, quote unquote. But, you know, everyone's like, you got to throw it down the field. You got to throw it down the field. And I'm like, guys, you don't understand. That's how the Broncos have ran their offense all year. These short crosses, run after the catch. But I would have liked to see maybe a couple shots down the field early in the game just to loosen those safeties up a little bit to maybe open up the middle of the field, even if you don't complete it. Just show them that you're willing to throw the ball down the field. And we saw later in the game, Malcolm Smith got called for two or three pass interference or holding penalties. I think Thurman got called for one of them as well. And I'd like to see them put the pressure, not on Sherman necessarily, don't throw to him, fine, but get it to Marius Thomas. Throw a couple back shoulder throws down the sideline. Try to get it to Julius Thomas going up the seam to, you know, keep Earl Thomas and Cam Chance a little bit loose over the middle. I would think that would have helped them free up some of the stuff they normally do on those crossing routes if they would have challenged them down the field early in the game.
Well, an ideal script would have called for that, but I just think the Seahawks defense set the tone right from the start that I don't even think Manning wanted to get creative, because also I think part of it was the offensive line didn't give him a great deal of time to throw down the field.
That, no question about it. Hugo, what else you got?
Well, you know, when I look at a game like that, I try to take away lessons for the Giants. And, you know, guys, a lot of people snickered at the Giants' offensive approach, and we like to have balance. But really, if you look at the Broncos, they play right into the Seahawks' hands. I mean, you know, when you play out of a shotgun and a spread-type offense, kind of with lateral routes, you're playing against a defense that's very quick, side to side. That play right. I mean, it would have been interesting to see a team that could get into two tight end sets with the fullback, try to establish some balance. This is the kind of game where you just got to grind with a team like that. Try not to make mistakes. Try to grind it out, almost like the Giants did in the NFC Championship game back in 2011. You get into a into those wide open offenses against a team like this. They got a great defensive backfield. Just play right to their hands. Quick linebackers. Just play right to their hands. Plus, they have. You know, they have the new version of the NASCAR package with Averill and Bennett and Clemens. They just, you know, bring in a bunch of pass rushers. So it was just a bad matchup for the Broncos. Not enough balance would be one of my observations. You know, the other lesson, I heard some of the post-game comments.
Well, Hugo, in fairness, it's tough to have balance, too, when you're down, you know, two scores after two possessions in the game.
Oh, I agree. I agree. They had to come from behind, but that's typically the way. And again, you don't get away in the big game from what you've done all year to get there.
Right.
But that's the way the Broncos play. It's kind of Peyton out of the shotgun. They think they have these weapons, and they play kind of wide open. It just doesn't work against a team like the Seahawks. The other point I was going to make was I heard a lot of the post game comments about how this team was constructed. And I'm thinking ahead to our draft. You know, what I want to hear from Jerry and Mark Ross when they go to the podium after the mid-rounds is a couple of things describing the players they pick. I want to hear that these guys are smart guys, that they're tough guys.
I agree.
And that they love football, that it means everything to them. Because, you know, I think way too often we've gotten enamored with the guy with the long arms or the guy that had the good workout at the combine. You know, at the combine, there's going to be 300 guys who are good athletes in shorts.
Draft football players, guys, you know. Right? Draft football players. Don't draft athletes. Draft football players.
You know, guys, where it really means everything to them. So they're going to come in and become pros and work hard at it. We don't want guys around here who are, you know, they do it for a hobby, right? They hang around for 4 years, eat at the dining room, travel with the team, and then disappear. So that's the kind of player we need to draft, because I think if you get that kind of player, at least the coaching staff could work with them and coach them up.
Hugo, I'm with you. Thanks for the call, bud.
okay.
And all right, Hugo.
And Lance, that was one thing that struck me. I think Hugo makes an excellent point that when I was at media today, media day on Tuesday, and I was listening to all the different Bronco players on offense, their skill position guys specifically, whether it was Knowshon Moreno or Eric Decker or Demaryius Thomas or Julius Thomas or Wes Welker, when they were talking about the offense and speaking about their system, it was almost like you heard Peyton Manning speaking through them. All the guys just seemed so locked in, so intelligent, so studious, so well-spoken. And you could almost just see, like, Peyton Manning had infected them.
It rubbed off on them.
Just see that they were so into the offense and understood it inside out, not just, you know, what route to run on a certain play, but they understood the concepts. And it allowed them to be on the same page with the quarterback. And I don't think we saw that from the Giants wide receivers this year, whether it was Nicks or Ruben Randall. I think Cruz you see it from, but I think it was missing from some of the other guys this season on this roster. I got
to
be honest.
Well, that's why it gets back to Hugo's point that you need to see what they do on the football field, but then you also need to look at what college they went to, what type of system they run. I mean, take, for example, a guy like Richard Sherman. Going to Stanford, you know, that says a lot about him. I'm not saying that every guy that goes to a highly ranked higher education institution is smart, but you're not getting into Stanford by pure luck. There's got to be something there. Plus, he was the salutatorian. I'm sure a lot of you who are familiar with his story coming from, you know, Compton, which is a rough neighborhood, and making good for himself because he took his educational background very seriously. So when you see what Sherman does in terms of his preparation, and there was a great piece on the NFL Network.
How great was that piece?
Breaking down.
Different
okay,
quarterbacks,
exactly.
Right?
Looking at the tendencies. You know, that's smarts. That has nothing to do necessarily with agility or versatility, John. That means that he's taking his studying side of the game very seriously. That's what you need on a football team.
Yeah, Richard Sherman is nowhere near the best athlete in terms of quarterbacks in the NFL.
But he makes up for it.
He makes up with it with his toughness, his strength, and his hard work and his mental acuity in terms of studying quarterbacks, studying wide receivers, and knowing what they're going to do before they do it. And in that piece, and I tweeted that like I think a week and a half ago. You guys can check my timeline. It's there somewhere. I'll try to retweet it later on today because it was really an excellent
feature.
John's
trying to get more followers, so that's exactly why. Anyway, continue.
So
I had to throw that in. You tweeted it out. Yes, nobody else saw it any other place. Other
I actually,
from your
I actually retweeted Bob Hoppe's tweet.
Oh, okay.
Believe, actually.
Sorry. No, so now you're giving somebody else credit.
Well,
it's nice.
Whatever.
Okay.
The point being is that he literally would be like, "All right, well, again, in this offense, I know these guys. I know, you know, when Phillip Rivers drops back to throw him and Keenan Allen, you know, when they run this play, it's going to be a back shoulder. So what I do, I know the back shoulder is coming, but I don't cover the back shoulder. I play the receiver." To make it seem as though the back shoulder throw is going to be there. But then I turn my shoulders right as he's throwing it. He can't bring the pass back, and that's how I get the interception. And his point was that I don't want to just cover these guys and prevent the pass and knock it down. I want to make a play. I want to get a pick. So I'm going to bait these quarterbacks
Correct.
Into throwing the ball by showing them something that's not really there. So just like Peyton Manning's playing mind games with the defense, you have Richard Sherman, a cornerback, playing mind games with quarterbacks. And it was a fantastic
piece. It was a great piece. There was also a play where he was talking about the Jets game, where he was supposed to go to the outside. He started that way, then went back into the inside, and in that game, I think, wound up with an interception in the red zone. So, really, the X's and O's of the game, he took to a whole other degree in that piece. And, you know, I'll try to retweet it, too, or I'll try to find it as well for people who interact with me on Twitter, because it is a great piece if you haven't at least seen it.
It's a very small, exclusive group. 201.
Keep the digging early.
939.
Can't let the snow affect
4513. Hey, I'm going to give you about right back into the city. You better be nice to me.
Oh, wow. Boy, somebody's going out of the way. Oh, continue. Well, this show's getting better and better now that I'm hearing about this.
Let's go to Drew in Virginia. Drew, good morning.
Hey, Drew. Good morning,
Drew,
guys.
Are you there? Hey, Drew.
Yeah, good morning, guys. How you doing, man?
Doing well, Drew. How about yourself?
Hey, man. Good, man. Great game last night. But like everybody else. Because I really would find it hard to believe that anybody saw this type of a score or game. I don't think anybody saw that type of a score. That defense was impressive. Seattle was impressive. And, you know, you could tell right up front that they came to play. You know, me and my daughter was watching the game last night, you know, and, you know, even my daughter was, like, stick a fork in them. So, I mean, that was big props up to Seattle. Hello?
Yeah,
yeah,
we're here,
yeah.
Drew. We're listening.
Oh,
yeah.
I
heard the four comment and the daughter. We're following you.
It was impressive, man. Let me say something real quick about Richard Sherman, man. Actually, I got a couple of things, but I'm going to try to be quick on these. You know, looking back at this whole Richard Sherman controversy, and first and foremost, I think that kid is a very smart kid.
He is.
Very smart person. Okay. Looking back on the Richard Sherman, and this hit me last night, really, after the game. Okay. You know, Richard made that statement after the San Francisco game. And, you know, immediately there was a firestorm. There was this huge firestorm, and it was this firestorm pretty much all the way up leading up to the Super Bowl, okay? To me, you know, looking at that now, to me, I think Richard Sherman kind of – that was calculated by Richard Sherman from the standpoint of this. When he did that, all of the focus went on Richard Sherman and not too much on Seattle, you know, and then everybody was just talking about Richard Sherman. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, they had to talk about Seattle, but I don't think the focus was on Seattle like it would have been if they didn't have Richard Sherman to talk about. So I kind of think Richard took like a lot of the spotlight and focused it on himself while Seattle could focus on other things that they did. And I say that because when you look at his last night interview, and to me, the media was definitely trying to bait him. But when you looked at last night's interview, it was completely different. It was other. It was gracious. It was spot on. And he didn't even go there at all.
Yeah, but Drew, you know what though? Even last week, once he finished with the sideline interview, and they had Richard Sherman on set after the game, and all week doing the media stuff during Super Bowl week, he was very gracious. He was very smart. He answered questions fairly. He didn't act, you know, like an idiot. I know there was a big controversy last year, too, where, you know, people call me a thug on Twitter. I'm not a thug. Look, I don't think Richard Sherman's a thug either. I think thug is the wrong word. But is it fair to say that after that game against the 49ers 2 weeks ago, we acted like a punk after the game? I don't think there's any doubt about it. When you go and you go up to somebody right in the middle of a game, you know, after an interception, you give them the choke sign, you're acting like a punk. That's what you're doing. And when you go to try to shake some, I know he's like, oh, I tried to shake his hand to say good game. Well, you know what? If you are Michael Crabtree and that just happened, do you want the guy that just beat you to go up to you right after the game and try to shake your hand and get in your face? No, that's not being a gracious winner. That's acting like a punk.
But
do I think he's a bad guy? Do I think he's a quote-unquote thug? No, I don't. But I think in certain circumstances, he acts like a bit of a jerk on the field. And it's all right like a jerk sometimes, but also not be a thug and be a very intelligent guy, which I think Richard Sherman is. I think you can be both at the same time.
Well, my point is this, okay? I mean, you know, whether he's a thug, a punk, a jerk, or whatever, you know, that's all opinionated, but the guy's a highly intelligent guy. And like I said, as far as what happened last week, I think it was calculated and everything. I mean, first and foremost, I know that Richard can be a lightning rod. I mean, I saw the ESPN interview with him and Skip Bayless and everything. So I get all that. But I'm just saying, as far as last week, I just think what he did was calculated. And I think it kind of worked. At any rate, yeah, the guy's a smart person, and I think it kind of worked out for them. The stadium last night was loud. That's the loudest I've heard yet. I'm sorry, I'm Yankee. The MetLife Stadium, man. I mean, that stadium was live. So those fans definitely came out there to cheer for Seattle. And, I mean, yeah, the stadium was just was loud. I've never heard it that loud, man. I want to go back to something. You know, and this kind of goes back to Eli. Okay, or this offense. Last night, and again, make no mistake, Seattle came to play. But last night, you're talking about one of the greatest players of all time. That's everybody universally acknowledges. And he couldn't get protection. The offensive line could not basically give Peyton enough time. You know, people was talking about Peyton should have made plays. Peyton didn't have time to make plays. That's what I was looking at. That's what I was saw. Matter of fact, I was pointing that out to my daughter last night because it was like it was one play Peyton threw down the field and he missed and he missed on the play. And my daughter's like, wow, that was a bad throw. Why did he throw that? I said, he didn't have time to throw that ball. I said, I guarantee you if Peyton had time to throw that ball, he wouldn't have missed that receiver wide open. And the matter of fact, that was something that some of the people was talking about, is how Peyton liked to just snipe a team and just pick them apart. And you saw a perfect example of that last night. Peyton threw that, but I think it was like on the, I think it was on that second possession, he missed a play that was open. And it just came down to it. He didn't have any time. Point is you know, and I'm going to go back to this again, a good offensive line may have given him a better chance. Now, I'm not saying understand what I'm saying. I'm not saying that Denver had a bad offensive line. My point is when your offensive line breaks down or has bad plays, I don't care what quarterback you are, going back to Eli, who you are as a quarterback, you ain't got time to set up and throw the ball, you're going to look average. And Seattle just dismantled Denver. Beautiful game defensively. But it just goes to offensive line. You don't have to play. You're going to get beat. Russell Wilson, one other thing. Russell Wilson, yeah, I thought he should have won MVP. But personally, I understand completely, and I kind of agree, that defense should have got the ball. Defense definitely should have got it.
Thank you, Drew.
Yeah.
All right, Drew. All right. Appreciate the phone call.
Peace.
Appreciate it.
And in terms of Peyton Manning not having enough time to throw the football, I mean, you could clearly say that about any quarterback in this league that struggled this year. Ryan Tannehill, Joe Flacco, Eli Manning. If you don't have protection, you're not going to be able to play to your strength. So that's why it is so important for the offensive line to play at a high level, because that's what makes the quarterback who he is. And a big reason why the Giants struggled, and we sound like a broken record because we've been talking about it all season long, is the offensive line. A lot of people want to say, well, it was Eli Manning's decision making. That was one facet, one thing in play. But, you know, he didn't have a chance because he was running for his life. And his brother was doing the same thing last night as a result of going up against a defense that is above and beyond any other defense that he has seen, not necessarily just this season, but maybe even perhaps during the course of his career. One other point I want to make before we get back to more of your phone calls about Drew talking about Richard Sherman and whether or not his antics off the field were somewhat calculated. You know, number one, it was in the heat of the moment, I think, what had transpired after that Niners game. And anybody who has played football knows it's an emotional game. I'm not saying that that excuses what he did, if you want to consider it classes, but you can't overlook the fact that he was tied up in the emotions of the game. He was involved in a game-ending play, and there was bad blood, which a lot of people don't realize, between those two.
Well,
it didn't just stem from that one game.
I think it was the bad blood that really did it. But you can be emotional, and you can be happy, and you can celebrate. It doesn't mean you take it and you rub it into the face.
Well,
of the
but
guys
if you despise and hate the
How
guy that you're going up against,
does he hate Kaepernick?
Well, Kaepernick. Well, hold on a minute. What about what Kaepernick did in the Panthers game? What
that was just
talking
as bad.
About classless.
That's just as bad.
Rubbing
not,
it into Cam Newton doing his celebration.
I'm not
so,
defending
you know,
Kaepernick.
I think it goes across the league. There's
Kaepernick,
a lot of guys that are
Kaepernick
out of line at
times. Acted like a punk when he
there
did that
go.
Too. The same way Cam Newton acted like a jerk when he was down to the by 30 to the Giants. He did the Superman thing in the end zone. He's being an idiot.
But at the end of the day, that's who Richard Sherman is. The bottom line is he's an emotional guy. He showed this time and time again throughout the regular season, throughout his career. So when people say they were stunned by what happened, no, that's who he is.
Oh,
he's
no.
a guy that
stunned.
Wears his emotion right. on his sleeve. So, you know, I thought it was a complete overreaction personally. Marshawn Lynch, for example, didn't talk to the media. That was also blown out of proportion. Why? Because if you followed the Seahawks, Lynch hasn't said a word to the media. So he didn't do anything different this week right. than he did during the course of the season. The Seattle media knew that. The problem is the national media is now catching up with those storylines. I don't think those things were calculated. I think they were being who they were. And the reason why Pete Carroll and anybody else associated with the Seahawks organization doesn't go out of their way to try to change them is, why would you do that at this point in their career? You got here because of who they were. You don't all of a sudden try to alter the script when you're one win away from winning the big game. All they did was they followed the same blueprint that got them there. That's why, to me, I think the media completely blew out of proportion these two storylines.
Yeah, the Marshawn Lynch thing didn't bother me. It didn't bother
But it
me.
Bothered a lot of people.
I know it did.
So that's why I just wanted to make
Though,
that.
Though, I will say this, and I was talking to one of our old college friends the other day, Brooke Silver Braga, and we had a conversation, and he goes, look, what's the one point of sports in the larger social context of this country? And, you know, Brooke tends to be a deep thinker with things of this nature. And, you know, he's in news as much as he's in sports. And one of the big reasons sports is a part of culture and part of society is that it shows you how to compete. It teaches you how to be a good winner. It teaches you how to be a good loser. And I think it's fair if you want to criticize somebody for not being a good winner or not being a good loser because of the way they act, whether that's who they are or not, I think it's fair to criticize them for that. So I think it does set a bad example.
Well,
it's not how you should act.
But, you know, this whole thing about athletes being role models is another thing to me that I get irritated by because, you know, they're entertainers. You watch football, getting back to the point that you
said.
But
if you're a public figure, I have every right to criticize your behavior if I don't like it.
Well, you have every right. But I think that you also need to look at it from the big picture. And I'm saying that Sherman has been like this time and time again. If he was completely out of character, then I would have said, wow, what is he doing? But he's done this.
Well, no, that's why I wasn't surprised by it. It doesn't make it any less of a jerk
move. No, it doesn't, but it's who he is, and I think you need to take into consideration who he is when you look at a situation like that. That's all.
You're almost
it's hard
him,
to change
you're
guys,
almost, you're almost
but,
saying, no, but you're almost giving but, him more credit. It's not as bad because he's a jerk all the time.
No, well,
if he was cool usually, just a jerk this once, it's better.
I wouldn't classify him as a jerk, but here's the thing.
He acted like a jerk.
But here's the thing. It has not hurt the team once. It hasn't hurt the team. And I think the Seahawks are looking at it that if it takes away from the team during the season, then we need to get him to change who he is. They won because of who he is.
No, but it isn't. Well, I don't think they won because he acts like
no,
a jerk.
No, but that he's confident as who he is as a player. That's why he plays at such a high level because he says to himself, I'm the best corner in the NFL. We're just talking about getting guys in the Giants organization that need that chip on their shoulder.
What do you think of Patrick Peterson?
He doesn't necessarily behave like that, and he's a very good corner. Okay, but are the Arizona Cardinals a step away from winning the Super Bowl, where the Seahawks are?
They won 10, but...
They did. But, you know, I mean, it's hard to... What I'm saying is...
They don't have Cam Chancellor or Earl Thomas in the secondary with Patrick Peterson. Patrick Peterson is just as good, if not a better quarterback than Richard
Sherman.
And he doesn't go out there, pound his chest, and act like a jerk.
Once again, I think that there's a lot that goes beyond what we see out on the football field between those two. And it goes back to an incident that supposedly happened at a charity event hosted by Larry Fitzgerald. The guys just don't like each other. You know, here's the thing. Athletes get criticized for giving the typical average answer after games. And people can't
people
stand that. No, they do. People
that.
Can't say, oh, I want to thank the holy higher power. I want to thank my best friend. I want to thank my mother for baking me breakfast in the morning. Come on. A guy shows emotion for once he's unique. You know, let it be. I mean, that's how it is when I look at it. Football is an emotional game. I think that's what people just need to step back. You know, we can't expect these guys to be perfectionists because they're not.
Emotions are fine. But that going up to somebody and giving the choke sign is a premeditated action. I'm going to show
and
this
that,
guy up because
that,
I just beat him.
So then that, to me, you could say was a little too much. But I guess I'm looking at also what happened with the post-game interview, which to me is what everybody got caught up in.
See, that to me, that doesn't bother me as much as the stuff on the
Listen,
field necessarily.
Did he have to do that? Did he need to rub it in to that degree? No.
He rubbed
but
it in.
Once
exactly.
again, once again, Sherman's been rubbing it in time and time again. That's what I get. Listen, this is the same guy that walked up to Tom Brady and said, you mad, bro? This is the same guy that got punched at by Trent Williams.
No,
it's
I
not
know.
As if he's been a saint after games.
No, he acts like a jerk.
And he's not a fine. Thug, though. Jerk and thug are two different things.
I
didn't say you called him that, but
that I don't
society
him a
takes
thug.
The term thug and throws it around as easily as the term jerk.
To me, thug denotes like some type of violent act.
It's
if you're a
criminal.
Thug, you're doing yeah,
you're a criminal.
Criminal. Exactly.
That's what
right.
it is by definition.
Yeah, that's why I termed it. He acted like a punk. He acted like a jerk.
That's a better fitted word.
Right, exactly. And
so that's why I thought people were out of line by just calling him a thug because they thought that you know,
well,
guy
thug,
was
thug
unruly.
Also has a lot of undertones
Correct.
To it that have you know obviously racial implications that a lot of people
Absolutely.
Connected those two words, even though to me they're. I don't see how one has to do with the other. But, you know, there is a tone there that you don't like. But I agree. To call him a thug, I think, is just factually incorrect. Look up what thug is in the dictionary. It's not like Richard Sherman's been arrested for assault
no, not at
or
all.
Anything
he's
like that.
He's got a perfect resume.
No, and I think he's probably deep down, he's a good guy. And odds are he probably just lets his emotions get the
well,
best
that's
of
what
him,
I said. Yeah.
In the, but in a bad way. And you can have emotions and you can, you know, express those emotions in a way that's not – showing up your opponent.
But here's another factor that I wanted to throw out. We don't know what is said between both parties during the course of the game.
No, you don't.
I'm sure there was a lot of trash talking. Once again, I'm not trying to excuse what Sherman did, but for all we know, Crabtree was giving it to him the whole game. And once again, the emotion builds up. You finally made that game-changing play, and you let it burst out. Right? It may have not been the perfect ideal setting, John. I'll give you that. But you put yourself in his shoes. I don't know if everybody would have acted like a saint, given the emotion. It's very easy to look at it from afar.
No, that's fair. I still think you can make the argument he probably went a little overboard.
And listen, he admitted that when he had time to cool down.
And he did. And Pete Carroll,
so give him credit for that.
To Pete Carroll's credit, said the same exact thing. So, exactly. No question about it. We got sidetracked.
And if everybody wants to debate this, I'm more than happy because I'm fired up already.
This guy doesn't want to talk about the game.
Here
we go. He just wants to talk about the halftime show.
Oh, absolutely.
Which I think
we know who this is.
Which I think was actually pretty good. And that's Lennon Merrill. Len, good morning.
Hey, guys. How you doing? Thanks for getting in this morning. Hey, listen, the good news for me this morning, first of all, on a very quick personal note, I got my wife home from the hospital after some surgery, so I'm feeling good this morning.
Everybody's okay?
And how about you? I know you went under surgery recently. Len, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Listen, she consented to get the surgery done early in the off season so she could be ready for the regular season.
There you go.
Very good.
Tell JPP if he needs surgery, earlier is better.
You know, it's Len, you're funny you mentioned that. I'm happy you brought that up. Everyone's, you know, everybody's really happy that Jason Pierre-Paul doesn't have to have shoulder surgery, and it's great news. And, yeah, it's great news as long as we don't run into the same situation as last year when he said, I don't have that back surgery, and then he has it on the 1st of July.
There you go.
Right.
There you go. Listen, the other piece of good news, 2013 is over. It's 2014. Everybody is 0-0. Seattle Seahawks, enjoy the next 48 hours because we're coming after you. We're coming after you, Seahawks. Giants, next year. It's going to be a big year.
Seattle, good luck.
How long do you think it's going to take? How long do you think it's going to take for Russell Wilson's agent, who gets off the plane this morning in Seattle, stops by the local Starbucks, gets his favorite drink, and runs straight over to the general manager's office and says, let's talk as soon as possible. Here it goes, guys. The Seahawks are going to be in trouble. I give it a 3 out of 10 for Russell Wilson to show up at OTAs and minicamp. That contract's going to have to be redone. Not that he should have been the MVP, but he was the quarterback on a Super Bowl-winning team, and everybody remembers that. That life, they're gonna have to renegotiate before that contract is over. Hey, a couple of real quick things. I know you wanted to wait till later in the week, and I agree. Let's wait till later in the week. I just want to say one thing. Michael Strahan, Bruno Mars, the Red Hot Chili Peppers, great halftime show.
It was a good halftime
show. Yeah, it was a great halftime show. And Wellington Mara, he's probably applauding. Whoever made that decision on the opera singer who sang the national anthem. Just a great show.
And Len, I was told that it was much better in person than it was on TV. I heard she blew that stadium away.
I'll bet. Man, I mean, that was just old-time Giants back when we opened that stadium and people like Martha Wright used to sing the national anthem, stage and screen star from, acted on Broadway for many years and was friends. And just every Sunday, Martha would sing the national anthem and I thought about that. Also seeing Phil Simms. Oh, man, that's great. 22 for 25, 275, and 3 touchdowns. You know what I'm referring to. Greatest Super Bowl performance by a quarterback ever. Great to see Phil.
Now, Len, just to note, by the way, on the first thing you mentioned on Russell Wilson, by NFL rules, you cannot renegotiate a rookie's contract until 3 years go by. So he will play next year on his rookie contract.
That'll
and
be
I'm
his
sure
third year.
They'll work on a contract extension after next season.
Hey, thank you for pointing that out. I really had forgotten that. I thought maybe he could get in there this morning and start negotiating. But, You know, Seattle is going to have to pay for this eventually.
That's the nature of the salary cap.
Len, it'll take a couple years before they have to, because a lot of these guys are still on their rookie deals.
Right,
this defense
right.
should be able to stay together for the most part next year, and then you're going to start having a little bit of change in 2015, and then eventually, like you said, these guys want to get paid, and they'll eventually spread out and go elsewhere.
Well, they're most likely going to lose Brandon Browner and Walter Thurman this season, who are both going to be free agents. Browner was an undrafted guy, and Thurman was late, too. So, you know, they're going to start to see what it's like when you don't have the same guys in place.
You wonder how much Browner is going to get considering
the
all his suspension issues he has, too.
Listen, to the Seahawks, enjoy it. Well-deserved. They're the champions. Hail to the champions. But remember what I said, guys. We're coming after you. We're coming after you. They better get ready. All right, this week should be interesting for the Giants. We're starting 2014. You know, before the week is over or early next week, I think we're going to see some, you know, some personnel moves, and we're going to see some guys that we've cheered for 10 or 11 years are going to be gone. You know, Corey Webster, probably Chris Snee. I could see them making a move on David Boss. I hope not with Kiwanuka, but maybe they'll make a move on Kiwanuka also. But there are some guys who are under contract for next year who I think the Giants are going to bite the bullet on and just, you know, going to release. And that's you know, guys who we've won championships with, and that's actually going to be a sad day. But that's how you get better, and that's how you chase down the Seahawks.
And by the way,
guys,
Len, thanks, Len. Yeah. I appreciate it. Thank you, Len.
Yeah. Okay. Bye.
One. And there is a moratorium, by the way. The Giants cannot like re-sign Justin Tuck. That is a free agent until you get to, I believe it's the first week of March, something like that. There's a moratorium on re-signing your own guys to extension.
And I think they push back the start of the year for the NFL season.
Free agency is not until, I think, March 17th, 15th, 16th, something like that. And then
the new calendar has to officially begin.
Correct. And I believe you cannot re-sign your own free agents until something like either the last couple of days of February, first week of March, or just the first week of March. What the NFL is trying to do here, folks, is they're trying to spread all their events out so they have something every month. So they
Correct.
Have the Combine in February, which looks like we might get sent out to, by the way, over that weekend. And not you, just us, sorry.
Of course.
But I don't trust me, from what I hear, I don't think you want to go. I hear it's actually kind of adult, the Combine. But we should be – hopefully we'll be out there for that. And then they have the league year starting in March with
March 11th, Tuesday, March 11th.
That's when you can re-sign your own guys?
Well, that's when I think free agency officially starts.
Okay.
Correct. Which is the official start of the new year.
And I think from, like, March 4th to March 11th is the week before free agency starts where you can re-sign your own free agents if you want. You get a window. That window closed, though, once the regular season was over.
Well, they can't allow you to have such a significant edge for too long a period of time because, you know, obviously they want players and they want other teams to have an opportunity to compete for some competitive players on the market.
All right, we got two people on the line. We'll take those two callers, and then we'll say goodbye. It's almost 11 o'clock. We've had a great show. And obviously during the course of this week, folks, we'll talk about the Giants free agency. We haven't really talked much about the Giants' new quarterbacks coach on the show either. We've touched on that only briefly, and we'll do Strahan going into the Hall of Fame as well. So all that as we move forward this week. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Roldy in Bayshore is up first. He's been holding the longest. Roldy, what's up, pal?
Good morning, John. Good morning, Lance. How you guys doing?
Doing well, Roldy.
Good. I mean, it was, you know, it was a little bit of a disappointment to the Super Bowl, you know, in the point of, you know, I wanted to see a more competitive game, you know. But congratulations to the Seattle Seahawks. That defense was a phenomenal all year. They did their thing. But it seemed like, you know, I felt like the Broncos should have ran the ball a little bit more. And because for some reason, the Broncos' offense that they tried to do with the wide receiver screen, it was not working, but they kept on going with that same play. And they saw that the Seattle Seahawks was stopping that play. And I know that's their number one play, that receiver screen to Demaryius Thomas.
Well, you know, Roldy, think about it, too. The reason I think they went to the screen play, and this is one of the reasons the Seahawks had some issues stopping the run this year, those defensive linemen are constantly attacking upfield. They're trying to penetrate. They're trying to get into the backfield. And usually when you're dealing with a very aggressive defensive line, you can beat them with screen passes. But you're right. The Seahawks played those screens, whether it was to the running back, tight end, and wide receivers yesterday, very well.
To perfection.
They did.
And I just couldn't understand why they kept them going back to that same exact play. But, you know, again, like I said, you know, mad props to the Seattle defense. I guess, you know, Seattle made a statement yesterday saying that, you know what, the league is really not turning into an offensive league. It's still a defense, a defensive league. Defense wins championships. I mean, by looking at their secondary, it's just, you know, I just wish that the Giants could, you know, look at that and emulate that. You know,
hey, look,
I mean,
and Roldy, look at it this way. The two best teams in the NFC this year are both defense-first teams. So, you know,
right.
the demise of the great defenses in the NFL has been greatly exaggerated.
Right, right. You know, and with Antoine Roll and Will Hill, I'm glad that we have those guys, but I hope these guys saw the way that secondary played. You know, if they could turn up and be more aggressive like that, like getting people faces, you know, I think I would be very comfortable with our defense. And it's pretty much what I have. I'll talk to you guys tomorrow. And thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, Roldy. And I think one thing that I want to touch on, and by the way, Ted Crum makes a good point. Richard Sherman said on ESPN, I guess, this morning that Peyton, very classy guy, that Manning went up to him after the game to see how he was when he injured his ankle and was in a walking boot.
There
so,
you go.
You know, exactly. So I think you're right. When you get Sherman and he's calm and he's not in the game, you know, he doesn't
Everybody's
right,
quick
act
to
like
judge.
A jerk.
Very quick to judge.
Well, it's easy to judge that he acted like a jerk when he acts like a
well,
jerk.
Well, it is, but once again, I mean, if people saw what he did throughout the course of his career, I don't think it would have been as a surprise. I think a lot of people watch his big games.
I don't care if it's
games.
A surprise.
No, but that, well, that's
jerk,
a part of it,
jerk.
Though. But that's also a part of it. I think that if you knew the history of a guy and you know that he's out of line, you're not as surprised
but
as you
But does that
are.
Make Kevin Garnett any less of a jerk? He's still a jerk.
But you know what well, to expect, though.
Yeah, but he's still a jerk.
Well, you know that he does a little trash talking, and you
a
know
little.
That's a part of his game. But you know it's a part of his game. That's what I'm saying. I mean, I think people are a little bit more accepting of it because it's not a stunning development.
Anyway, getting back to the point I was going to make before I got diverted by Ted's very important and timely tweet.
Yes.
But you don't quite, to me, as much in the past, get the top safeties and linebackers. And I think something that really sets the Seahawks and the 49ers apart is that they have such good players in the middle of the field, whether it's the Niners and their middle linebackers, as well as the old Navarro Bowman comes back next year and is the same type of player. You know, they have Dante Whitner. They had Deshaun Goldston last year. And then with the Seahawks, you have Cam Chancellor and Earl Thomas in the middle of the field, Wagner, the very impressive young linebacker. And I think when you can control that middle of the field, Lance, that's where you can really become – and a great defense as opposed to a good defense. We saw that last year with Beeson, how he just transformed the middle of that defense and really turned it into a much improved thing. And I don't think you have those quality of middle linebackers and safeties coming out of the draft that we've necessarily had in the past.
Well, those are the guys that set the tone for the entire defense because they have the best vantage point of how everybody's lined up. So I think that when you have playmakers, intelligent playmakers in the middle of the field, you're right. You're going to make sure that your defense performs very consistently each and every week. And if you lose a guy like that, for example, the Dallas Cowboys lost Sean Lee, and look at what happened to their defense. So it is very imperative. I think that's been well documented that you need a guy that can certainly go out there and set the tone, like a K.J. Wright even for the Seahawks, too. He's another guy.
And Roldy made a great point. I think the Giants, if they can bring Beeson back, they're very good in the middle of the field now. Between Beeson, I know he has some struggles in coverage now and then, but then you throw in Roll and Will Hill, who are two very active and athletic safeties, and if Stevie Brown comes back and can be a factor at safety as well, and the Giants have a pretty good middle of the field. It's like baseball. You want to be good up the middle. You want to have a good catcher, a good second baseman, a good shortstop, a good center fielder. I think the Giants are in pretty good shape, especially with the way their defensive tackles played as well this year. Very good in the middle.
Well, that's what I was going to say. As long as you have a good complementary front seven around that middle, you know, then you're going to have a very good defense like they showcased in the later stages of the season. So as long as they can keep the nucleus together, I mean, that's the goal of every team, John. You want to keep your core together. You don't care if the complementary players change because they can be somewhat interchangeable, but the key is keep your core together. That's what every team wants to do. They want to put the significant part of your salary cap into your core. You do that, then you know, okay, for a long period of time, you'll have some consistency.
And the issue you have, too, in the NFC East, getting beyond the Giants for a second, the Eagles' safeties are terrible, the Redskins' safeties are terrible, and the Cowboys' safeties are terrible. So that's really where the Giants, I think, have a big advantage over everybody else in the NFC East. 201-939-4513. We'll go to Frank in Tampa to close out today's show. Frank, Good morning. How's everything?
Good morning, guys. So glad you're back. Show's great, as always.
Appreciate that, Frank.
Last week, we were talking, Lance, a bit about Brendan Myers, and when I heard Steve's voice this morning, the hair on my neck went up again, and so I started thinking a little bit more about him. And, you know, because this is something that last week I didn't get a chance to really to say, but, you know, I know these personnel people have got every kind of film, every opportunity to look at, you know, these guys' track records. And all I had, though, is luckily a friend of mine is an Oakland fan, and so he has those shortcuts from last year's season, the year before season, from when he was with the Raiders. And I hope you guys are sitting down because I want to give you a couple of quick stats here. From the seasons of 09, 10, and 11, he played 42 games. Guess how many catches he had?
We're talking about Brendan Myers.
Right.
Let me see. 42 games his first 3 years. Let's say he had 78 catches.
42 catches.
Wow.
Yeah, he had that one breakout year. Prior to that, it was relatively quiet.
Well, that's what I'm trying to say. Just like, you know, you can't judge Beatty's career by last year. You know, you can't go back. But even if you take last year's season apart, which I did by looking at the films, he had all of his catches, virtually all of them were in garbage time. He can't block a lick. We know that. But, you know, they were getting killed in every game. So all he did is go out 10 yards, turn around, catch the ball. No explosion after the catch whatsoever, even though he's so undersized. Just a stationary static receiver. I don't understand for the life of me what it is they thought they had. I don't know if you guys remember.
Well, Frank, in fairness, Frank, they didn't spend a ton of money on the guy. They basically got him at the veteran minimums for 1 year, and there was a reason he wasn't in a high demand. It's not like the Giants invested a lot of money and committed to him long term.
Right, but they needed somebody to play the position, and he killed them by not being able to block. So they could have put the same money into somebody who could at least have helped them out on the offensive line and, you know, caught static passes, which is all really he did, you know, he did for us. But it was, you know, he's so out of what we'd possibly be looking for.
No, I think it's fair. That's fair,
Frank.
The
Giants tried the same thing about 15 years ago. I don't know if you guys remember.
Well, Pete Mitchell. Yep, Pete Mitchell.
Yeah. Exactly. But Pete at least had a little bit of explosion. You know, he could run a little bit. I mean, this guy's slow in addition to it. And I saw the same interviews that Steve was talking about. It made me laugh where I could see he was almost being pressed about how, you know, Coach Pope's going to work with you, blocking and all. Even for the camera, he just wasn't buying it.
Frank,
I mean,
fair to say,
Anita Marks.
Frank, fair to say that I think the Giants made a mistake with Brendan Myers last year, and I think they know that. And I'd be surprised if he's back.
Yeah, but didn't they give him a 2-year deal or something?
It was actually technically a 4-year deal, but they could get out of the deal after 1 year without having to pay any money. So
they gave themselves flexibility in the contract.
Okay, but that just leads me to my last point, which is, you know, because it's coming up, I'm going to give the Giants a little unsolicited advice. But, you know, these 1-year deals are killing us. And when we do sign these guys, you know, if they do have a great year, like Bennett or someone, they move on. And if they don't, well, then we don't want them. And I just don't understand how, if the Giants see somebody like Beatty, like Bennett, who they think are a perfect fit, and they see a diamond in the rough, I don't understand why, instead of just kicking the problem down the road, knowing we can't afford them if they have a stellar year, they can't come to some compromise agreement with the agent that says, look, we're not going to give you the home run you could get if you go out and kill this coming year, but we're going to give you something of a compromise so that if you do get hurt or if you don't have that great year, you're going to make a heck of a lot more money than you did on the free agent market. Have the courage of your conviction. Put your job on the line, Jerry Reese, and say, this is our guy. We need him, Bennett. We need, even though the rest of the league might be going, oh, I don't know, or the fans might be, or it could be with Beeson. But have the courage of your conviction. Come to an agreement so that we can root for these guys to do well. not knowing the better they do, the less chance we have for them to come back.
Well, but Frank, you also need to take into consideration from the player's perspective, since they're not able to be a free agent very often, they don't want to be locked up, especially a guy like Martellus Bennett. Remember, think about what he was coming from. He was coming from a Dallas situation where he never had a starting job. He was playing in the shadow of Jason Witten. So he looked at, okay, New York, a big market, gives him an opportunity for further exposure. And then if he does really well, then he can cash in even further. So I think that's what was coming from Bennett's camp, how they were approaching that deal.
Well, here's a question, though, and I think this goes to Frank's point. Do you think if the Giants would have said they offered, they had about like a 1 year, $3 million contract, something like that?
In that vicinity.
Give or take.
Yeah.
I'd have to look it up. But let's say if they said to Martellus, look, we'll give you 3 years, you know, $11 million or 4 years, $13
million. You got it.
Do you think he would have taken that with like three of that million guaranteed? Do you think he would have taken that deal coming from Dallas? Or do you think he would have said, no, I want the one-year deal with a chance to break out? I think – now, again, I'm not sure – I have to go back to see if the Giants can even afford to do with that in that particular year with the salary cap situation. I'm not sure. I'd have to look into all that. Just a hypothetical situation. I think that's something they could have looked at. But I think Lance's point is well taken, Frank. You have to have a player that's willing to enter into that type of agreement with you. And a lot of times that's probably not the case.
Oh, and I'm not saying it's going to happen all the time.
Right.
But take a shot at it. You know, I mean, you're taking, as a player, everyone's got some skeleton in their closet.
They might have, though, Frank. You know,
they
might have
armor.
They might have had that discussion with Martellus Bennett, and maybe he said
no. No, I understand. But, you know, you've got Beeson with the injury history. You got Beatty, who was a little bit of a flake, and no one really knew if he could do it because he'd never done it. So if you think that they can do that, a compromise that the player, you know, doesn't get quite what he might do if he goes out and kills, but if he goes out and blows out his ACL or something, you know, or just does terribly and turns out he's not a stellar player, then, you know, the player is covered. Just a compromise that gives us some chance to retain the guy if we think they're that good. I mean, look at a couple guys. I just was just thinking as we're talking here. If you would, and I'm glad we didn't do this, but imagine if you'd gone, say, to Aaron Curry or Ross or even Myers with that kind of deal. They'd have probably jumped at it.
Well, and that's the thing.
That's why you got to protect yourself from the other side, Frank.
Exactly.
Right.
Because, like you said, it's a catch-22. Yeah.
Right, but have the courage of your convictions and put your job on the line as the GM and say, you know, people might go, oh, my God, Beeson, he's got this injury history, et cetera. Why did he do it? Bennett's a flake. He's never even started. Why did we do it? And then, you can go up there and polish your knuckles a little bit and go, that's why we did it at the end of the year.
Well, but Frank, I want to get back to your bigger point. And John, didn't mean to cut you off.
No,
I'll let you continue.
Yeah, yeah.
When you say that these one-year deals are killing the Giants, Beeson, you have to remember, the Giants didn't sign outright, so they had no control over his contract. So you have to dismiss him from this conversation.
Great point. I'll give
you Martellus Bennett. Outside of those two guys, though, you know, Mike Patterson, I think they're going to be in a position to re-sign him, even though he signed a one-year deal. It's not like he broke open the piggy bank for himself by his performance this season. So, you know, think about other guys on this roster that signed one-year deals. Brandon Myers, you're looking in from the other side and saying, hey, the Giants did a blessing by not locking him up because now they have the flexibility. So I don't know big picture, Frank, and I understand your point, and I think you brought up a lot of good things. All of these one-year deals, I don't know if they're losing out on a great deal of guys other than Martellus Bennett, who was last year.
But while we were acquiring, or even after a couple weeks, when it started to look like, man, this guy can play, he's perfect for us, there's nothing preventing them from restructuring or redoing his contract. So in effect, he is a free agent. He can tear up his deal, and the Giants could have given him a new one while the season was going on. And Beeson would be, you know, taking his risk off the table or getting hurt again or whatever. And the Giants would be taking a risk that he plays well. But I don't think you'd take him out of the conversation. He was able to renegotiate.
Right,
but
Frank,
it's a big risk, though, from the Giants' perspective, Frank. And I understand
sure.
You got to take that risk. Like you say, you got to be aggressive. But given his injury history, Frank, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in.
Thanks,
I don't know if
I
would have done that if I'm the Giants. I mean, that is a big risk.
Well, it depends
giving
when.
Him some money.
And that's the thing. You have to find the balance. If you're the Giants and you go to Beeson, you know, in week 12 when they're playing the Packers, yeah, maybe Beeson's open to it, but then you're taking a big chance because what has he proven so far? But if you go to Beeson in week 15 against Seattle, then all of a sudden, no, I'm waiting to free agency.
Yeah,
I'm
why would you do
in.
It if you're Beeson? Of course, because you have a good resume now.
Like Frank says, in some cases, there's probably a balance that you can find. But I think your point was a great one. who have they really put themselves in a bad situation with, except for Martellus Bennett? And by the way, let's not make Martellus Bennett out to be this flawless player. We were taking calls an offseason ago with people killing Martellus Bennett from not being on the same page as Eli Manning on a lot of plays and running the wrong routes and being lazy in routes and those turning interceptions. So let's not make Martellus Bennett out to be the combination of, you know, Jason Witten, Jimmy Graham, and Tony Gonzalez here either.
Well, the problem is, John, they're looking at Martellus Bennett. They're looking at Brandon Myers, what they just dealt with. And then Martellus Bennett looks like he's a Hall of Fame tight end after what Giants fans had to experience with Brandon Myers. So it's all relative to some degree. But you're right. I mean, let's not act as if Martellus Bennett, if he was here this season, the Giants would have won about five or six more games. They had major issues beyond the tight end spot.
Want to come in tomorrow? What do you think?
Yeah, we could definitely swing that. Absolutely.
Okay. I think we can still do a little game. We do a little strand. Still a lot to talk about. Maybe we can do a little Super Bowl commercials. We could have some fun with that. What was your favorite Super Bowl spot?
I liked actually the Full House one with Stamos and the yogurt. That was pretty good.
I know. I was never.
What is this like? The facial expression. I was never a Full House guy.
Oh,
okay. All right. So that doesn't.
I was
you
not
know,
a Full House
your,
guy.
Let me. Ask, well, you're going to pick the Bud Light commercial where it looked like a movie.
I thought it was a well done spot, the Full House one. I thought it was.
I thought
clever.
It was funny.
I'm just not a big Full House guy.
Well, it was funny how they utilized it and they set it up.
I enjoyed the one with Arnold playing the ping pong.
Of course, I knew you were going to pick that one. That's what I said. The Bud Light commercial. I knew you.
The Budweiser
read like a book.
The Budweiser one with the puppy and the Clydesdale was also pretty good. I'm usually not a big Clydesdales guy. I really don't like those spots generally. I thought that was a good one. I'm also a sucker for like golden retrievers. So
well, there you go. I didn't know.
Yes.
So you learn something new every day. Overall, though, nothing to really write home about.
Unremarkable, I'd say.
You know.
Trying to think if there's any others that really stuck in my head. The Kia one with Morpheus was weak. The Matrix one, not a big fan
of that.
Then
there was the one where they had, like, the same commercial twice. Extra long, double. It was pretty early in the game.
No, that was the
that was a car one.
The double Ford one.
Correct.
With
that
Riggle
was the Ford.
And then
yes.
James Franco back
That's
to
right.
back.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. That didn't really do anything for me. The Scarlett Johansson one with all that pub going into it. That didn't do anything for me either.
Well, it's not a bad image to look at. I'll admit that.
It's not.
So
SodaStream. Also, I own a SodaStream. There are some flaws, but it's a pretty good product.
See, you'd be a perfect businessman because you're looking at the big picture. I'm looking at the smaller picture here, but, you know, that's fine. We'll leave it at that.
I can make so many inappropriate jokes.
Yes,
off
that's
that
why
statement,
I'm going to cut it off
but
there.
But I am going to move on.
this is why you want me to come in tomorrow to break
exactly.
down commercials.
Nothing else really. Anyway, we can talk more about it tomorrow. We'll talk about Strand. We'll talk about more Giant stuff as we move forward. Everybody be safe in the snow. I will be safe driving back into the city momentarily since the office is closed. And excellent work, Lance. We'll see you tomorrow. Everybody have a great day and enjoy. Have a good one.
Absolutely.